Coming up, it's not Christmas. It's NBA trade deadline day. And we're doing part one of a multi-part podcast next.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Diese Woche Wintertraumplätzchen XXL. 600 Gramm für nur 2,79 €. Oder meine Metzgerei Hähnchen-Minutenschnitzel. 400 Gramm für nur 3,59 €. Entdecke viele weitere festliche Angebote. Jetzt bei Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. I put up a new Rewatchables on Monday. We did our live show from Chicago, The Fugitive. You can find that on Spotify, wherever you get your audio. You can find it on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bill Simmons. And we also launched Ringer NBA and Ringer NFL channels recently. The Ringer NFL channel, we're putting up a lot of good stuff up there from Vegas. Some video stuff Ben Solak did, stuff from podcasts. Subscribe to our channels. We don't put bad stuff on the channels. We try to put only higher end stuff. We try not to waste your time. And that's the same premise behind my channel, where we run clips from this podcast. We run entire podcasts. We run Rewatchables podcasts. We might even mess around with some live stuff. Subscribe, stay tuned. Just keep an eye out for the stuff we're up to. We're up to a lot. 2024 is going to be a big year for the Ringer. Very excited about it. Very excited about today. Ryan Russillo, we're both on call like doctors. We've been ready to roll, waiting for trades. And then finally, around 7:30 a.m. Pacific time, stuff started happening. We're going to break down everything that has happened in the past like 18 to 24 hours in part one of this podcast. First, our friends from ProJip. All right, it's 9:05 Pacific time on trade deadline day. The trade deadline coming in a couple of hours. It looked like it was going to be the worst trade deadline we've had in a while. And then a flurry of trades. Ryan Russillo is in Vegas. I am in Los Angeles. We're going to do at least two parts today. This is part one. If there's a mega trade between part one and part three, which will be winners and losers, we'll do a part two. Big winner so far, Russillo. The Knicks. So they get OG Anunoby and Precious and Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks, and they don't have to touch their picks, and they don't have to give up anyone basically in their top three if you think Robinson's the third most important guy they had. Just getting this for Bogdanović, they traded Grimes and Fournier and Flynn and 2 second-round picks for Bogdanović and Burks. What an awesome trade. And they still have all their firsts left. What was your reaction?
Well, it's a no-brainer because you're just adding extra guys. Like, I've always liked Bogdanović. He's 40% from three. He was really good last year. He's just an incredible shooter, and he's got a lot of size. But
and some playoff experience.
Yeah, right. Like, that Pacers series, he was the number one option against the Celtics years ago. And you were like, okay, you guys probably aren't going to win this series if Bogdanović is your number one option. But he's just a better offensive player than any piece that they've moved out here. Here's my question for you, though. Do you think he closes in a Tibbs lineup in a playoff game?
So I was trying to figure that out. I went to the game Saturday night when they had a bunch of injuries, and it was so clear that it's like Brunson needed help and maybe a second creator. So Bogdanović is perfect for that. So if we went Brunson, Randall, OG, let's just mark those three in with a big guy, then it's Bogdanović or Dante as the fifth, right? Depending on what the matchup is, which is pretty nice flexibility. I mean, the big thing for me is when Brunson's off the court now, they have somebody they can run the offense through. And that was the one thing they were missing with the Quickly trade, which turned out to be a great trade. But they can run 2 6-minute stretches in each half through Bogdanović and be pretty good. I'm really high on him. Did you watch the Celtics-Pistons game this year when the Pistons almost ended their home streak? And they were running everything through him and Cade in the fourth quarter. The Celtics have always had problems with him. Like, I don't know what it is, but he always likes going against them. So if the big picture, the Celtics are the team you need to beat, he's going to help. I liked it. I thought it was a really good trade. And they also kept all their firsts for if Mitchell decides this summer, like, hey, thanks, Cleveland. It's time for me to go. And then they'll have he's Burks there.
Look, he's been on fire, too. I mean, in January, I think he was, what, 46% from three the whole time? So, you know, when you look at the full Bogdanović package, it's not a ton of rebounds. It's not a ton of, like, assists, necessarily. But the shooting has just held up his entire career. And he's also older than people realize, too. Like, I think he's, what, 35 in April? Because he didn't come over right away when he was drafted. So he got in the league later. But then you look at, you know, granted, he missed time this year, but... With Detroit, clearly he was going to get more options than he was going to get with New York. But I do wonder defensively, even with his shooting, and I think you're totally on point with the Brunson of like, hey, can somebody else be some kind of like offensive release valve for me if things get bogged down or depending on the staggered rotations and how they want to run the offense. But knowing Tibbs, when I think about like DiVincenzo and Hart defensively as options in a playoff game, if I just had this image in my head of Bogdanović watching it.
Right. Well, I will say for him, we've seen, like, remember he had that one stretch when he was actually like half decent going against LeBron defensively. It wasn't like the disaster it would have seemed on paper. Like, he at least tries. I think Tibbs, you know, Fournier, Tibbs is just like, I'm out. Like the game I went to last weekend.
Right. It's not
all those
that,
injuries
right.
And Tibbs is like, I'm still not playing Fournier. Fuck off. I can't handle. They want guys who are at least going to try on defense. So, he's got size. There's certain people you can throw him on. He's not going to be able to stop Luka, but not many guys are.
He's been a net negative almost his entire career defensively. So, you know, depending on if you think of it as a size matchup. And look, between OG
but he's not a sieve, though, I guess is my point. He can at least, like, he's got size, he knows where to go, and he's not, you know, teams will hunt him, but it's not like, oh my God, we have to get this guy off the court. I don't think he's that bad.
No, I don't. I'm just thinking, the only reason I'm even asking this is because of Tibbs. Like, that's the only reason. The trade is a slam dunk. Now, when you think about offensive options and the second unit stuff, if they want to go that way with him and the way DiVincenzo's played out of his mind, and it feels like Hart just kind of impacts games just a bunch of different ways. And you probably felt like Hart and Grimes were a little redundant anyway. So it's a no-brainer considering what they gave up. And I think the best part about Bogdanović, which, you know, I think at some point we should talk about like the Philly part of this, is Philly was rumored to be in play for him, but I think the Embiid injury changes probably a lot of like Morey's options. And then you got to figure out like, okay, what could the projected cap space be for Philadelphia and all this stuff? The fact that Bogdanović is $19 million next year, and I know it's not even fully guaranteed.
And locked in next year, yeah.
Right. But you'd have to think that Bogdanović at $19 million versus what you'd be spending for that kind of player, even at an advanced age, it could be more than $19 million, and you'd be extending it for probably 3 years. So there's a lot of cost certainty there where I'd be shocked if he's not. Like, I don't think they're just going to do the $2 million and then make him a free agent. I would think that this is, but they have that option if they want to, but I still think that's a really good number for what he provides.
Well, remember we would talk about this when we did the Sunday pods, how the Celtics were in that stretch of a couple years where they never had the right contract for trades. It was always like they had giant contracts and small contracts and nothing in the middle. So the Knicks had this Fournier contract that they had to move before the deadline because it's a trade chip. You got to turn it into a player. You're going to lose it at the end of the year. They turned it into Bogdanović, but it's also a trade chip next year for them, right? Worst case scenario, it's an expiring a year from now and somebody that can help them in some of the, you know, in down the stretch in the playoff games. And then they get Burks out of it. I'm not a huge Burks fan. I've never been like, oh man, I wish we had Alec Burks.
Really? I've never been
a huge fan, but he is shooting 40% from three this year. Now he's playing on this shit Pistons team and whatever. None of the games have been anything, but you know, if you're replacing Grimes, Dante's getting most of those minutes and Hart, like Grimes was completely expendable for them. And they're at least have somebody they can put in the corner who can make some threes and I don't know. So you like him more than I do, I guess.
I just always have felt like Alex Burks has had these moments where you're like, this guy can score.
Yeah.
I think he's had a lot of stretches. And granted, he's been on, what, six teams now?
He's been
Utah, Cleveland, Sacramento, Golden State, Philly, New York.
Seven.
New York again.
And Detroit, by the way, he was already on the Knicks in 21 and 22.
That's what I liked him too. Look, I'm not telling you Alec Burks, you're going to be running plays for him at any point in the playoffs. I'm not saying any of those things, but you know, there's just certain guys that just seem to always get some buckets, and he'll have throughout his entire career. When I've watched, I'll be like, you know what? That guy's got like a nice mid-range turnaround. So if he's in this deal, I can only imagine Monty Williams going, "You guys are killing me." Right. Sir Mike, you know, how am I supposed to get to 15 wins?
Well, they traded like 5 threes a game, and they traded like almost 33 points of offense. Good.
That's what they should have been doing this year.
Yeah, and they're bad, and now they're almost guaranteed to be a bottom four team. Burke says your 9th or 10th guy is fine.
That's what I mean.
I still feel like they need one more big dude, and I'll be interested to see. I kept hearing Nick Richards with them, who I really like, and I think could be an interesting deadline piece. We'll see if he goes today, but I still want them to get a little more size. Big picture, though, and I can't wait to make fun of Detroit, but we'll hold that thought. Big picture, like, you know, I've been worried about this Knicks team from a Celtics fan standpoint. And now you look at their top 9 or their top 10 is basically Brunson, Randall, OG, Hart, DDV, Bogdanovich, Hartenstein, and Robinson when Robinson comes back as the center combo and Precious. And then Burks is the 10th. And that's a team that could hang with the Celtics in the playoff series. Like it is. And they're going to be tough and they're going to be hard to go through. They're going to be really good at home. They have a closer. They have OG to throw at Tatum. They have some size stuff that I think would be a little bit of an issue if Porzingis is healthy for that series. But for the most part, they got a 2 seed and they didn't have to see the Celtics till the Eastern Finals. I think it's a legit threat. I really do. Things that worried me about the Celtics team are the coaching stuff, the depth, the Porzingis injury potential, and then the stuff that happens in the last 5 minutes of the game with the decision making. And this is the type of team that I would be afraid of for them. Am I too panicky?
Maybe a little. I mean, don't you think it'd still be surprising if this Knicks team were in the NBA Finals?
Yeah. But I don't love anyone in the East. I mean, the Celtics have like a 5-game lead in the East, and Cleveland is now basically the closest team to them. And
they're the 2 seed. Nobody talks about them. I mean, they found a way to stay above water here, and not just above water, win every single game while all those guys were out. And now all the guys are back. And, you know, I'm still stung from that Knicks series with them last year where I'm like, they're just going to have too much firepower for them. And it's like, nope, actually their offense is going to look terrible. Right. It's going to look like Mobley and Allen actually in a playoff series. It's just too many non-scorers out there, depending on who the fifth guy is after Garland and Mitchell. And yet Cleveland, like all this love that we're giving New York, Cleveland didn't even have two of their most important 4 players and still did this. And I hate the kind of like, oh, you need to do this more. You need to talk about them more. But they're the 2 seed. But I think we're all really just stung. It's all like TBD with them because of that Knicks series.
Well, both of us felt like, what is this team? What's their identity? Mitchell Garland, let's figure that out. Mobley Allen, can they play together? And then those two guys went out and they kind of settled into some identity that I just feel like they hadn't found before. Now it's clearly Mitchell's team. So the other guys come back. They have to fit into that. And Allen got unleashed. And now it's like, all right, Mobley, anything you give us is a bonus. But really,
he's been great since he's been back.
Yeah, he's been good. So the little pressure's off on him. But yeah, that team's interesting. If you had to rank the Celtics competitors, would you still have the Bucks first?
Yeah.
And who would you have second with the Embiid in question here?
The Knicks.
And yeah, Cavs, I think the Knicks, fourth, Philly fifth?
I can't get over that Knicks-Cavs series. You know, if they didn't play each other last year and right. the Knicks got eliminated by somebody else, then yeah. I'd be sitting here going, hey, we've seen Mitchell have insane playoff runs, you know, but Brunson shatters through any limitation you ever put on him. But when it comes to regular season playoff stuff, like even when we get out to the Western part of this thing, I just have a hard time buying into something that I've never really seen be successful in the playoffs before. And even with Milwaukee having, you know, the Doc record since he's been hired, like, granted, it's going to take a little time, but they have, for a team with that kind of record, I can't remember ever watching a team that has that great of a record that has a moment once every 10 days where you're like, what the hell is wrong with you guys? And right. yet, because I've seen what Giannis is capable of doing, that I still have a hard time sitting here being like, yeah, I think I'll pick the Knicks in seven against the Bucks. Would you? Would you pick him like right now? You picking the Knicks against?
I don't
the Bucks
like Milwaukee at all. Like at all. I
to so you pick the Knicks.
I would pick the Knicks against the Bucks. Yeah, at this point, until the Bucks can show us they can play well for like 3 weeks in a row. I mean, to me, their record. I've personally watched them steal 6-7 games where you're like, how the fuck did they just win that game? They played like crap, but they don't even seem happy after. But they look like one of those NFL teams, you know, like the Vikings 2 years ago when the Vikings were like 13-4 and we're all like, eh, no way. This is not a 13-4 team.
The Vikings had never done it before. Like you're talking about how did they pull out some of those close games? I've watched some of those games too. It's because then Giannis is like this unsolvable thing. And so when I think about the playoff series and you're like, is
can
New
he
York
just be unsolvable four times
right.
out of seven? I don't like when teams every couple of weeks just lose by 30 or fall behind by 35. It's like the worst sign in the NBA when you can't make it 2 weeks without like getting just annihilated by somebody. Makes me nervous.
I'm not telling you you're wrong on that one because I'll, you know, there's certain nights you're sitting there on League Pass, you just go, wait, what's the Bucks score? And then every now and then you check the standings again, and you go,
they're 33-16? How did this happen? So the Knicks, incredible front office maneuvering here. And on top of it, they proved one of my favorite adages, when in doubt, trade with the dumbest team in the league. And I guess the question is Detroit, have they been the dumbest team in the league for at least a few months or maybe even longer than that? And are they clearly the dumbest team in the league now? Because I think they are. I just refuse to believe that trading Bogdanović and Burks, the best you could do is Quentin Grimes and like a second round pick. That was what those guys were worth. I don't see it. But I don't agree with really anything they do. I mean, you go back to last summer, like even that Marvin Bagley contract where we were like, wait, that was like 3 years? That wasn't just like a one-year deal with a team option for a second one? The Monty Williams for $80 million? Like everything they do, I disagree with. What they did to Jaden Ivey this year? Like there's a reason their record sucks. There's a reason I don't feel good about their future. There's a reason they're probably going to blow it up after the year and bring in a whole new bunch of people. But this, if I was a Pistons fan, I'm like, why are we letting these guys even trade? These guys just shouldn't be allowed to trade. Let's take it to the summer and start over with an actual vision. I don't get it.
The Monty Williams thing is one of the dumbest decisions I've seen from a team in years. So it's not just this year.
Yeah,
there's certain things when you look at the roster construction where you're like, what's going on? But then there's also some players that they've drafted that I really like. So I don't think it's as if like they were so high on Durin and they were right. They were right about it. I think there's a chance they may even have taken him instead of Ivy and then they were able to trade back in and then get Durin. And whenever you have to hire a coach as like the headline thing, and you know, it's not even knocking Monty, but like if you're paying Monty more than anyone's ever been paid to be a head coach, that should be somebody in the room going, wait, what are we doing?
Right.
Like, do we?
It's not Eric Spoelstra?
Yeah. What? Just to be clear. And then when you pay a coach that much, he has even less interest in the development part of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the circular thing that will happen for as long as basketball exists. The front office loves all the young guys they've drafted. They've scouted. They put all of this time into evaluating these guys. You get that one pick, you take them, and it's like, okay, cool. And obviously, they loved him enough to even take the guy. And the coach is like, well, I don't want to lose all the time. And so with Monty having this much money and this much power and this length of contract, he's like, I don't really have to prove myself to the front office because I'm the most powerful guy in the organization.
I'm not going anywhere.
Right. And so there were so many moments this year, I'm like, what are they doing with this closing rotation? So, you know,
Ivy thing was nuts. And now you see the way he's playing the last 6-7 weeks. Like, it's just everything was nuts. The Knicks right now are third on FanDuel for Eastern Conference odds, 7-1. Milwaukee's +220 and Boston is +130. The Cavs are 9-1, and that's been climbing. And the Heat are still 18-1. And Detroit is infinity to one because they're probably going to. I don't even know if they're the worst team because we've had such a nadir of bad teams this year. But they just lost 32 points. I assume now this is the Cunningham Ivy show for them. But
that's what it should be. And it should be one more year of between Durin, Ivy, and Cunningham. What do we have? That should be the main goal next year. Not, hey, Killian hasn't made a shot in 4 years, so
let's run the offense room again.
Let's do that. Clearly,
by the way, I saw when that story leaked that Killian is feeling like maybe he needs a new team or whatever that was. I was like, this is the most Russillo story of the year. Killian Hayes being like, maybe trade me to somewhere where I could get a better look.
That happens, though.
For 4 years. You should be in the G League.
That happens a lot, though, when the guys of rookie contracts are coming up and they're just thinking, like, I've got all these minutes. I've had all these shot opportunities. So, like, what's my next contract going to look like? So then you'll see, like, there's sometimes I think teams get rid of guys that they don't even want to get rid of, but the coach won't play him anyway. But in this case, he was playing most of the time. So they have to figure out who they are with these lottery picks. I think Stewart's been terrific for him, or he's somebody else the teams would want. But you can't just have minimum rookie scale guys and then get to the cap or the salary minimum. And there is value of having veterans around. I'm not into the idea that everybody's supposed to be 20, 21 years old, the entire team when you're rebuilding, because you need to have guys that accept their roles and everything. But the most important thing is the resources that you've used on these top draft picks. And it felt like for a good chunk of the season, Monty Williams just wasn't super interested in that. I don't know.
It was awful. We're going to take a break. We have lots more to talk about. Happy Super Bowl to all who celebrate from FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're like me, Super Bowl Sunday, all about scoring the best seat on the couch, grabbing your favorite football snacks, placing some super bets. We talked about a lot of these on Sunday with Cousin Sal. I'm going to do my $1 million picks at the end of the last part of the trade deadline pod. The same game parlay that we talked about on Sunday, and then FanDuel is now promoting. It is over 13-1 odds. Mahomes under 262.5 passing yards. Noah Gray to get two catches. Pacheco, 70-plus yards. And Kansas City win the first half and the game. That is 13-1. It might even be a little better than that. You can do things like that on FanDuel. So many ways to get a W. You can bet on who's going to win Super Bowl 58. You can bet on touchdown props, points scored. Just a million things. Go check it out. If you're new to FanDuel, join today and you'll get $200 in bonus bets. When you win your first $5 bet, visit FanDuel.com/BS to sign up. Once again, FanDuel.com/BS. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You must be 21 plus, present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit TheRinger.com/RG. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
Die Kamera habe ich bei eBay gefunden. Refurbished. Liegt so gut in der Hand. Der Sensor Wahnsinn. Und das Objektiv wie neu. Und Schatz, weißt du, wie viel ich gespart habe?
Machst du jetzt ein Foto oder nicht? Finden, was passt. Zu dir und zu deinem Budget. Das muss eBay sein. eBay. Things people love.
All right. The sneaky trade of the day so far. We still have at least a couple hours left. But OKC got Gordon Hayward from Charlotte. They gave up Trey Mann's, Bertans, Micic, who I kind of liked as a backup guard. I wonder if Charlotte will flip him. And draft compensation that we don't know yet, but will probably be a second rounder. So Gordon Hayward, 15-5-5 this year, 36% from three. A vet. We all felt like OKC needed to get a little older. I can't totally say he's had a ton of playoff experience. Guess how many playoff games Gordon Hayward has played?
7.
Oh, it's actually higher, 29.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you said
I just
so
thought he's been in the league since like 2009 or 2010. I would have guessed like 50. Mann was the 18th pick in 2021, but was buried behind some guys. Wallace basically grabbed a bunch of minutes and time, and Wallace is excellent. Is Hayward in the closing lineup for them, in your opinion?
No.
It would be the giddy spot, right? If he's playing last 5 minutes, it would be in Giddy's spot, would be my guess.
I'm a little surprised by this one.
Yeah? Tell us.
Well, maybe they were that worried about all the, hey, our average age is now higher, so history is on our side for NBA championships. Obviously, that was...
StatMuse is going to... We're better with StatMuse now.
That was not the motivation. There's just so many players on the Thunder roster that we like, but I would have thought the main priority was trying to get another piece, some size.
You mean somebody some taller size. Than 6'7"?
Yeah. So, like, yeah, I guess you could say Hayward has a little bit of experience here, but I don't know that any of us, like, look at him and go, like, oh, man, you know, he's been through the playoff wars, so that helps with everything. I don't know how often. I mean, is it just a better outlet than Giddy?
Can we bring in Conspiracy Bill for a second?
Please do.
Is it possible they flip Hayward in a one-for-one for a big guy?
Why wouldn't they have already done it?
Because they get all the salaries, they add those up, and it's still lower than Hayward, who's making over 30, and maybe this allows them to get somebody in the 30s. That was the only thing. I agree with you. I felt like either this was move number one and move number two they haven't made yet, or, you know, maybe Portland's like, hey, DeAndre Ayton, any interest? And OKC is just going to say, fuck it, and get somebody like that. Because there are a couple expensive centers out there. So I think it's one or the other. I can't believe they would, you know, they have a legitimate chance to win the title. I can't believe they wouldn't get another big guy. Like, you can't go into March with, unless they feel like there's a buyout guy that they're grabbing. Nick Richards is still sitting there as like a $5 million guy for teams like the Knicks and OKC and a couple of the other contenders. And I still feel like he's going to be heard from today, but I'm with you. This either has to be first of two moves or they flip Hayward for a bigger guy.
Yeah, there's plenty that could happen that we still aren't aware of here, but I would think with hours to go before the deadline that you would have just gotten the third team involved, unless there's some part of this that I don't understand, which is always in play. But Micić was out of the rotation. He couldn't make threes. He was 37% internationally from three, and he just didn't make any threes for him.
Yeah, I still kind of like, I liked something about him. I feel like he's going to have a moment on some team somewhere at some point. But you're right, he couldn't hit threes. How many teams do you think can actually win the title? I know you did a couple weeks ago, you did your teams that I think could maybe win the title or whatever that was. But if I had to say, these are the finals teams right now, and then we have a group underneath them that are either one move away or need some luck. For me, it's like I only have three teams that I think could actually win the title right now. And then I have a bunch of people underneath them. But for me, it's Denver and the Clippers and the Celtics. Those are the only teams that right now I feel like I can absolutely see them in the finals. Everybody else, I could absolutely see them in the finals, but, and then there's a but. And those are the three that I don't have a but for.
That's the best list as far as like the definitive hard line of it all. I did the, if this team won and in June, you wouldn't say how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
Then I expanded it out to nine. And I included Minnesota. I included OKC. I even put Phoenix in there. I think I still had Milwaukee in there. I think I had Philly in there before Embiid. So it was a much longer list. But if you're going to be
Did you have Miami in there or no?
No.
Would you add the Knicks there now as a comma but?
Yeah. After those three, I still think there's a gap. I'd also like to see what it looks like. This run has been terrific. And I know it's a bit like whenever you look at Phoenix stats, you go, okay, what Phoenix stat actually matters here? I think the 11-5 with those three guys is the one that matters the most. I think that's what it was after the Bucks win this week with Beal, Booker, and KD all playing. So there's some stuff where you look at the Knicks and you go, okay, they destroy, well, not destroy, but they have an incredible record against the teams that aren't any good. So is their record against teams that are over 500, is that fair? Considering how well, like, Ananobi's been at a level beyond anything he's ever done in Toronto. That's how well he's played for them. So yeah, I'm okay with it, but I just want, like, I'd like to see it for another month. You know, instead of these months where it's just, hey, this one month, this team's incredible. Like, this happens to us every single month where there's a team.
Especially February, March.
Right. Except with the Clippers, it's 2 months. So it was a little easier buy-in.
The Clippers is more real, I think. Would you put New Orleans as a comma butt team?
Yeah.
They're pretty impressive last night. I didn't go, but I watched the second half as I watched The Godfather at the same time. The Godfather on Clips Pelicans. Pretty fun night.
I know. You were locked
great
into
times.
Both.
Great times.
I followed your tweets. I was having a blast. I was just sitting. I turned the TV off to read your tweets.
I appreciate that. I just want to point out with the Suns, one of the many reasons I don't have them as a comma butt team yet. Nurkic is 8 games away from his career high in games since 2019. He's played 48 games. His record since 2019 is 56. I'm just a little dubious. I'm dubious of Nurkic of 9 months out of Nurkic. Doesn't seem that realistic to me. Call me nuts. Maybe they'll flip him today in the trade deadline.
I think he's been good for them. I like the way they've used those guys. Yeah, and we'll also think they tried it against Atlanta when they lost that game. They tried to come back. Vogel just pulled the plug on it and they tried to go small and it didn't work. But I imagine that's something that they would like to unveil at certain matchups in the playoffs too.
I'm just not buying the durability with them. All right, next trade that happened. Philly just basically got Buddy Hield for a six pack of Michelob Ultra and some gummy bears and I don't know, some Cheetos. I don't understand it. I get it from Indiana's point of we should probably trade Buddy Hield. Neesmith's been really good for us. We have Mathurin. Those guys need to play. We have a little of a glut. We have a guy playing for a contract next year. If he's not getting 35 minutes a game, there's, it gets a little unhappy. So let's move Buddy, expiring deal. But is Morris and Korkmaz and 3 second rounders, like, is that the price for a guy who literally could shoot 50% in the playoffs from three?
Doesn't it feel like nobody's liked Buddy Hield forever? But they've all liked him.
What is it about Buddy Hield?
Yeah.
He's like one of the real housewives that all the other housewives just repeatedly turn on. And you're like, what does she do? She seems fine. Why do they hate her so much? Yeah, I don't understand it either. I like Buddy Hield. Guess what? I like guys who make 45% of their threes. Good guy having a playoff series.
It's the lowest minutes he's played since like 17. It's the lowest shot attempts. He's under 10 shot attempts per game this year. And yeah, they had him down to like 26 minutes a game this year because of Neesmith, who doesn't miss threes. I guess with Hield, it just felt like, hey, we need shooting. We need shooting. Shooting's awesome. Everybody wants shooting. But as soon as I saw the trade go down, when it finally happened, I'm like, why would the Pacers be okay then for moving on from him? Maybe if they look at it as like, look, we're going to lose him anyway. We're going to re-sign Siakam. We've got to start figuring out the Mathurin piece long-term. They've got another lottery pick in Walker who they didn't even play. So it might just be about, hey, we didn't have a long term for this. But for a team, the Pacers, that are making moves to just kind of be a now team while also like trying to figure out who they are moving forward, I think there's a little hint there that tells you like, yeah, he's all right, but he started losing minutes and shots to our guys here. So
yeah,
do what you want.
Well, so now they have left Haliburton and Siakam. They have Turner. They have Neesmith, who's been terrific this year. Mathurin, Nembhard, Toppin, Jalen Smith, and Walker. Basically is their nucleus, depending on whether they do one more thing. Philly, Embiid, if he comes back, Maxey and Harris, Batum, Covington, they still have his swings. They still have Melton. They've healed. They still have Beverly, Reed. They have a roster spot for a buyout guy. And it feels like they're playing both sides of the fence here. They didn't really give up anything for Hield. They don't know when Embiid's coming back, and they're just going to kind of play it by ear. I am skeptical that Embiid comes back. Where do you stand on that one? It just seems improbable that they're gonna be like, no, go out there, Joel. It'll be just play yourself back into shape with your meniscus issue. I don't see it.
I don't know how you feel that comfortable already saying that, though.
I just said I don't see it. I'm not saying I'm ruling it out. It just seems unlikely.
I don't know. I mean, if you're telling me somebody that's had a long string of injury history, and I always kind of add this in, I can't believe he's been this healthy throughout his career, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So you throw this in, and then, all the shit that he dealt with the Denver game, and then, hey, he's significantly hurt. You could see how hurt he was in the Warriors game before he actually got hurt again. He had the Draymond thing, and then Kuminga lands on him, and then he actually has to leave the game. But that entire game, he wasn't even close. He wasn't even close, and he's out there playing. So I don't know how that's supposed to look. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I think it had a lot to do with the motivation, because what do you do if you're the Sixers? You have the Maxey decision, which is a no-brainer. You have all of this cap space.
What's the Maxey money going to be? That's like 250? Unless he makes like third team All-NBA, then it could be even higher?
I don't know off the top of my head. It's just going to be whatever it is. Whatever it's going to be is what it is. He's hit that level now. So
yeah,
there was always this rumor that they had like maybe a play for Bogdanovich or maybe one of the pieces from Brooklyn, the names that get thrown around all the time. And this is the part of the cap space part. Like when you look at the free agent roster and you go, all right, well, what's actually out there? Because it's like, okay, well, is there a trade to be made where we cut into that cap space a little bit, but it gives me certainty on who the player is? I don't know if there's part of the negotiation. It's not even negotiation. I just say, like, if you're talking out and you're Maury and the entire staff, you're like, okay, like, what do we do now? Do we keep trying to get better right now? Or do we try to do something that's preemptive and has, like, we do our summer transaction right now, knowing exactly who it is instead of hoping during the free agency period, which is, again, that free agency period sucks. And I hate when these sites list the restricted free agents as top free agents. Just take them out, because anybody that is that good is just going to be matched anyway. So they're not even free agents.
Well, and then you have, like, the, you know, from a Celtics standpoint, where they have White and Holiday, who both, Holiday's player option is like $39 million. He might actually opt into that, but White is going to opt out. And I just think it's unrealistic they're going to be able to keep both of those guys. And if they do, the money is going to be insane for both of them. Like, if they could do what they did with Horford, with Holiday, and be like, all right, opt out of the 39. We'll give you 4 years for 110 and we can stretch it out. You'll make less the first year. But I do think somebody could come in and godfather offer White. You know, maybe it's the Sixers.
By the way, Maxey's eligible for 5 years over $200 million. So it's not, I don't think it's 250.
So, but he would, if he made all NBA, that I think gets tweaked a little bit, but I don't think he will. Next trade that happened, man, Toronto's up to stuff and I don't really fully understand it. They're 17-33 and they traded the worst of basically a Clippers or OKC first this year, which would be in the high 20s, and a couple expirings. And then got back Olynyk and Agbaji, both of whom I like. And the only thing I could think of with this is Toronto is a top six protected first to San Antonio. So they could either have, like, made their team much worse or try to make their team better. So that wasn't as bad of a pick as maybe it could have been. Utah just seems like, because they also traded Fontecchio to Detroit and got a second rounder back and a guy you like. But it seems like Utah is just trying to clear bodies out to get so their young guys can play. And Toronto, I don't know what Toronto's doing. What's Toronto doing?
I don't know. I mean, clearly it feels like, you know, people make jokes about, like, certain NBA teams going after players from certain colleges or certain agencies, you know, the stuff that's happened over the year with the Knicks, like, oh, it's all the CAA guys, or, hey, the Lakers are all these clutch guys, or they want to add more clutch guys. I don't know if they're just going Team Canada and saying, let's do it. You know, with RJ coming back and Olynyk, you know, Olynyk's a nice player.
Is Wiggs in play now for them?
They could probably have him. They could get him today if they want to. I don't know what the matching deal would be with that, but I don't really know. I don't know what clearly they wanted to do their work before and get all this stuff done. And I think you're also seeing, like, the quickly experience at 32 minutes a game instead of like 22 minutes a game.
Who could have guessed?
Isn't a ton of fun.
No history in the league of that happening. Can I just read you Toronto's top 10?
Sure.
It's super weird. Scotty Barnes, Bruce Brown, Quickly, RJ Barrett, Agbaji, Olynyk, Poeltl, Schroeder, and Grady Dick. I don't know what the fuck team that is. That's like a team you draft in fantasy or something. Bizarre. And I don't know if they got Olynyk because maybe now they're going to move Poeltl. You know, and I was thinking maybe that's the next OKC piece, but I don't even know if OKC has the contract to throw back at that. But they're just all over the map.
Are you a Poeltl file?
I would be for OKC. I'm not a fan of him at $20 million a year, but at least he's a big body that can bang with some of the centers you're going to have to play if you're going to try to win four rounds. You're going to have to play a center at one point. I mean, that's why we didn't talk about the Celtics trade for Tillman. I feel like they made that trade, like, specifically for a Jokic series, right? It's like, we might have to play Jokic. We don't have that type of guy who's not going to stop Jokic, but at least is that lower to the ground, thick guy that he seems to at least struggle with a tiny bit. I feel like that's why they got him.
Yeah, I think beyond Jokic too, it's just, okay, what's Horford going to look like? Where they've done a really proactive job of trying to just make sure he's more more ready for the long haul, because it felt like Horford fell off a cliff at one point in the playoffs last year. Like the season that they got Horford last year, I couldn't believe. And then at one point, we're like, I guess this thing's over. And then, yeah, Porzingis, I'm always going to be worried that he's going to be hurt all the time. So they add in another body to probably take away those Cornette minutes, which is probably
their number one priority. Yeah, they were the KP Horford insurance was their number one priority. I think they looked at your guy, Najee Marshall. I'm sure they looked at Nick Richards, but Tillman, Verno, big Sterling scouting report from him yesterday from Memphis. So he's a great guy, always smile on his face, three kids, an adult, just like a good guy to have on a team. And I think the Celtics chemistry is so good. I do think they care about that this year. Like if we're bringing in anybody, it has to be a good guy that fits in with the good guys that we have. Cause I think that's been a big reason why they've been succeeding. Everybody likes each other. You don't always get that.
Right. But say Boston Denver's in the finals. Like how many, if everybody's healthy, how many minutes is Tillman playing a game?
Maybe not any. Forgive me, the everybody's healthy. But Porzingis, I've been talking about it a lot. It's really something day to day. Just like, oh no. Like the game I went to Sunday, banged knees with somebody and he was limping around. I was just like, oh my God, no. He's just really tall. I feel the same way about Wembanyama. People pass a certain height level and you're just scared for them all the time, especially when there's people jumping and people landing. I like the Tillman trade. They certainly didn't give up anything. But from a Utah standpoint, does Utah want to be good? Or does Utah want to be bad? Right? Here's what they owe OKC, a top 10 protected first. And we saw this last year with Dallas, where Dallas was like, we want to be in the top 10. And they even benched Luka down the stretch. They know, but Derek Lively. I'm wondering if Utah is like, yeah, we don't actually want to be in the play-in, which would be great for Golden State, if that's how they feel.
They have such a weird team because, they seem to play above the talent level. They seem to be in more games than you would expect. I mean, their story this year is kind of the opposite of last year. Like last year, they got off to an incredible start. We thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. And then they definitely level off. This year, they start poorly. And then they played so much better for like a good stretch when I'd had Hardy on at that point. I was like, these stories for the two seasons are almost the opposite.
Yeah.
And, Sexton, he's not perfect, but he's really good. Keontae George has had his moments. Kessler's terrific. Obviously, Markkanen is a star in this league at this point, and Clarkson gets it going, and Olynyk can do a lot of different
things. They have a lot of offense. So yeah.
It just felt like maybe, I think getting their lottery pick, Taylor, some minutes is probably part of this. Agbaji had been better last year, so maybe they just looked at all of it saying, hey, let's move out the pieces that we don't have any future with here. And then figure it out. But also, when I look at the jockeying for the protection on the picks, everybody hates this draft, even though I know in May people are going to start talking about how it's sneaky better than everybody thinks, because it's just the way it works. I would wonder why you might not be like, hey, let's be just good enough to get rid of this pick now to get out of 24 if specific pick that's owed, even though they probably, they have their own picks as well.
Right now, they're the 10 seed. They're 26 and 26. The Warriors are 23 and 25 right behind them. And the Rockets are 23 and 27. So there's only three teams in the West that are 100% going to be worse than them. Then you go in the East and, it's Brooklyn, Toronto, Charlotte, Washington, Detroit all in the lottery. Brooklyn has 20 wins. That's the highest of those. Atlanta's got 22 wins. And I don't know what Atlanta's, they benched Murray last night. So I'm guessing he's going to be in part three of this podcast. And the Bulls are 24 and 27. So they're going to be right on that fringe of top 10. For me, it's just more fun if Golden State's at least in the play-in versus Utah or Houston. So I guess we'll see. But we were talking last night. We were comparing notes on things we were hearing. And we were saying how Danny's been in the spot 10 years ago with Brad Stevens when Brad was like just lights out with that overachieving Celtics team. And it seemed like they wanted to tank that first Marcus Smart season. And Brad was just too good. And then all of a sudden they're trading for Isaiah Thomas and that team was in the Eastern Finals in 2016. So I don't know. Danny's will zag when you don't expect him to zag. I don't know what they're doing is my takeaway. We're going to take a break and we'll come back with one more quick segment. All right. While we were in break, we had another trade. This is the wackiest trade of the day. Dennis Schroeder straight up for Dinwiddie. Steve Cerruti reporting this one. Schroeder makes 12.4 and Dinwiddie's at like 20. So Toronto had some cap space to play with and Brooklyn, I guess, wanted to cut some stuff. Who knows what they're up to? I actually kind of like Schroeder. But Dinwiddie's an expiring and there were rumors he was going to get bought out. We'll see if this leads to another one. Toronto's like the guy in the fantasy league that's just like, yeah, I'm open for business. Sending like the text with all caps, trades, question mark. And people are like, yeah, I'm going to call Gary, see if he wants to, if I can trade Jared Goff to him, try to get a receiver.
I think there's way more motivation. I mean, I have to look at some of the tax stuff with this, but Schroeder's under contract for $12 million next year. I mean, Dinwiddie's been bad. I mean, just legitimately bad at this point and not even close to being as aggressive as you do. Like the one thing with Dinwiddie, you thought, okay, best case scenario is he's not your starting point guard, but on an okay team, like, can he come in with the second unit? And he had some stretches even with Dallas in the past where I was like, you know, he's kind of got it going a little bit with them. So I thought he was so disappointing this season. I would say it's kind of like his offense every single possession, but the fact that he's a free agent, then I kind of wonder what, to your point, like, I don't, does Toronto want his bird rights? Is there another piece to this that we don't have yet?
The Nets are, I'm always confused by the Nets. They're on my confusing list. Like, remember last year when they were getting offered multiple first round picks for Finney Smith when they had all those wings and they were like, nope. Can't have them. I don't think they're getting the same offers this year. They just have a bunch of wings and a super weird team. I've not enjoyed what they've done the last couple of years. Are you at the free Cam Thomas stage of the Nets yet? Just let
no,
them go?
I think they're
unleash them.
Well, they kind of are. There's two things that are happening right now where it's not always the case with Quickley and Scottie Barnes, but that Oklahoma City double overtime loss was alarming. And I realize the argument against me is that Barnes was defending SGA and then he ends up on Chet at some point. He had to defend all these guys. I thought he was just at the point where he got a little sick of watching Quickley. And then yeah. I watched the Nets Golden State game. And at one point, Cam was 2 of 18 from the floor. But he was undeterred. He was an undeterred. He was a confident 2 of 18. And then I'm watching Mikal Bridges stand in the corner and watch him going, these two things shouldn't be happening. Because Bridges is the most important guy on that team. And, you know, Cam can kind of get his, but I think I counted some absurd stat when we were doing the draft stuff on him where the number of games where he had one or zero assists in a game, having the ball that much, it's just as soon as he tried to get Rudy Gobert on three isolations late in the game against Minnesota, like, he was getting switched into him and he couldn't actually even shake him. So,
Thad Young's in that trade, so the salary is actually even up.
Tell you what, if Thaddeus Young ever figures it out.
How many teams is that for Thaddeus Young? Hold on, without looking this up, how many teams do you think he's been on?
Thaddeus, 11.
Yeah. I'm going to say 9. Thaddeus Young. He's going to be like the new Jeff Green at some point.
Chris Gatling.
He's been on 1, 2, 3, 4... This would be team number 8. Man, that's lower than I expected. I guess he was on Philly for 7 seasons. Still got a way to go. I mean, Jeff has a chance to play for every team in the league if he can just stay healthy for 5 more years.
Is Thaddeus still not 30 years old?
Thaddeus is 35 years old.
I know. He's always one of those guys forever where you're like, wait, he's still in his 20s?
He was an 07 draft guy. So how many people in the 07 draft are left? Durant, Horford, Conley, Green, Thaddeus, and that's it. 5 guys. Durant's still humming along, man. Any other trades? I guess that's it for the things. All right, so there's this Dallas trade that I don't know. It's Daniel Gafford for Rashawn Holmes, but Dallas still has to figure out what the pick is. Seems significant because you can't just swap those two guys. Gafford on Dallas would be pretty interesting, though. Like, he's another, you know, lob around the rim guy that's kind of who you want to put next to Luka. I find it hard to believe they're just going to be able to get him for a second round pick. But this is why you trade with dumb teams, because Wash would be like, yeah, all right, take him.
I wouldn't put Washington down as a dumb team anymore. But
really, they're back for you?
Well, you got to give Winger in this group a little bit more than not even a full year with him.
Who traded for Jordan Poole? Was that the current group?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough start. Stumble out of the gate.
Fair. Gafford and Holmes.
Did you see the clips of that? I know you're in Vegas. Did you see the clips of Poole last night? Like, it's like sad now. This is the saddest story in the league. He's the Draymond punch, like, changed the course of his career.
He said his legacy is cemented with the ring. So none of this matters. Wow. Like, this is,
it's cemented in my head. He killed the Celtics.
I would love to have a guy with a 9-figure deal that young. And then I have him. And he'd be like, how do you feel about the future? And be like, who cares? Like, I did it.
Champion.
I already did it, man. 22. It's all that matters. Check the Wikipedia.
All right. It's 9:53 a.m. Pacific time. So we have a couple hours left. If you had to make a prediction of anything that's going to happen today that's either major or fairly major, what would the prediction be?
Jokic will not demand for a trade.
Fair. That's not major. Murray? Well, what's the biggest name for you? Lakers? Murray? Like, what do your spidey senses tell us?
Unless they just decide to trade Reeves, I don't know how you get that deal done. I want to see D'Angelo Russell and Trae Young on the same team, selfishly, but I don't
know. I've been thinking about you a lot with that.
Right. I don't know why Atlanta would do that.
The problem is that's the main TV for you every Hawks game the rest of the way. If it's Russell with Trae, you're locked in. I don't feel like you'd be watching the rest of the league enough after that.
No, I won't. We'll be doing the Sunday pods. You'd be like, what did you think about Nuggets Thunder last night? I'd be like, I'm worried about Sadiq Bey's feet. Like, I'm worried about his feet. I've been watching his free throw routine. I'd be like, yeah. Do you know that Sadiq Bey takes 8.7 seconds on his free throws? I've been timing. Like, because all I would do was watch Hawks games. I actually watch a lot of Hawks games now. DeAndre Hunter back in the fold.
Jaylen I kind of like the Hawks. I think the Hawks have been a stealth league pass, like, all-star team this year. They're in fun games over and over again.
We've watched way more Hawks than anybody realizes, but we've also been saying we kind of sneaky like their roster for like 3 years, and that hasn't really worked out. So,
I genuinely like Jaylen Johnson. I had him 59 on the trade value list. I was shocked he was that high because the league's super deep. I was like, yeah, top 60, doing it.
Wait, who did you have behind Jaylen Johnson then? Give me a big name that I'd be like, what are you doing?
Hold on. I'll call it up for you. I had
Jamal Murray.
No. I'm so kidding. I had Keegan 66, Jabari 65, DeRozan 64, Holiday 63, Caruso 62, Kuminga 61, Hakez 60, Jaylen Johnson 59.
So you wouldn't trade. Oh, wow. Okay. I see what you're saying. So if you called, if Golden State called you and said, we'll give you Kuminga, you say no.
I'd say no. Wouldn't you say no for that? You would rather have Kuminga than Jaylen Johnson?
The only thing that would make me say no, so I agree with your ranking, would be that, hey, I got to see the rest of the Jaylen Johnson thing. It's too soon, whereas Kuminga's a little bit more. Look, maybe Kuminga's finally turned this corner and, like, this is all real and it's going to happen. He's been really good now. So before, it'd be a much easier hang-up. But I still think it's the right move because, I mean, Jaylen Johnson gets out there and does some crazy shit in games. Not to say
also real pedigree. Like, he was really, for most of his life, one of the best guys in his class. Like, he went to Duke. Like, it's not like he's like an out of nowhere dude. It's just for whatever reason he fell to 20 in the draft. But they're actually like a 500 team when he plays, and then they suck when he doesn't. So I'm with you on Kuminga though. Big strides the last year. I think Murray will get traded would be my big prediction. I think that happens. I think somebody's going to talk themselves into him. It doesn't make sense to have him and Trae together. It does not work. And they're not going to have the balls to trade Trae, it doesn't look like. They scratched him last night against the Celtics. That was suspicious. Feels like he's heading somewhere.
The market for him has been just not great, man. Like, when you ask around about it.
Fairly, right? Like, I don't... He's one of those guys that's like, okay, do I have to trade Austin Reeves and a number one pick. So I can have DeJounte Murray. Where's that taking me if I'm the Lakers?
Yeah. And that's, I think, because of the Lakers part of it, where you, okay, say everything is in place. And then once the draft turns around, you have three picks eligible for you to trade as opposed to the one. And right now you're trading, a 29. So that's its own thing. And then you'd be moving Reeves in this, because I just don't know why.
I would have moved Reeves.
Look, Murray's better than Reeves, but for the contract part of it and then all the other pieces, it's, and then you have to ask yourself, okay, like, all right, you got rid of Reeves and now you moved another future pick when LeBron's not even going to be on the team anymore. Like, what are we actually doing here?
Well, they're not doing right by LeBron, though. They've only traded 8 first round picks for him plus 25 players. They need to prove that they're invested in him winning a title. We're going to wrap up part one. We might be back for a part two. That will be a little shorter if something mega happens. If not, we will be coming on some point around the trade deadline and then getting that part up as fast as possible. This was produced by Kyle Creighton and Steve Cerruti. You can watch it on youtube.com/Bill Simmons. Russillo, I will see you a little bit later today. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. You can call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. Call 1-888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.